because if they would have had to choose those ethics or not. There's no ultimate meaning in life, and there's no human free will. This all came from a guy, I'll think of it, but he was in stage 4 brain cancer, and he's spouting this stuff. And now he knows he's wrong. Unfortunately. But there are consequences. We're going to get into this idea of consequences of ideas. When I get talking about reason and thinking.
And why people would grasp that and hold on to those consequences instead of just throwing it on the trash heap.
Romans 1, John 3. Is where that's laid out. It is ultimately hatred for God. They do not want God. They would rather have this and brain cancer than God.
So Stephen Hawkins was of this.
Yes.
Did I misunderstand that?
No, he was. He's not the one that.
Said this, but he was of the mindset that this is what it was about.
Yes, and that's how he died.
I remember at some point or another reading that when he found out that he didn't originally start that way, but when he found out the disease that he had was as debilitating as it was, then there was no God, because God would not do that to him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A lot have come to that conclusion.
And did we remember that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he thought maybe there was a God. There was no commitment.
Yes,
and so.
Well, when you come begin your life young, you've got these hopes that God put in you, you've got all these things, and the inspirations God put in you, and then they're all squashed, and you change your attitude. And
they had so a lot of
But he lived a long life.
Yes.
And he basically shouldn't have because of his disease, but he lived a long time.
And he didn't really, I don't know if the disease killed him, but it's like the disease put him in the wheelchair and then stopped, left him.
He had
I have some other stuff, but that's for a different class. Oh,
God. He had a brilliant career.
Yes. There was one of his associates who went to school with him. They were assigned 10 questions by the physics professor, and like given 3 weeks, and you could work together and everything. And Hawking was partying, and finally, the day before they were due, somebody asked him how the questions were coming along. He said he hadn't started yet. They'd been working for 3 weeks and got like 8 or 9 out of the 10 finished as a group. He turned them all in the next day. Mm-hmm. And that's when we knew there was something special about this guy. And it was a gift.
He was so totally brilliant.
Given that was ultimately spurned because of his physical condition. So. There are this, and this is this is the root of Marxism today. Most everything that's going on with here, the socialism, the critical theory, all of this, that stuff, this is the root of it. And nobody says that. It is atheistic and evolutionary. And so if we can get rid of half of the humans on the planet, that's a good thing, because the humans are the problem. So there's, we get rid of spare dogs and cats, why not spare people? And it is, we'll get a little more into that. So in the materially monistic worldview, if there's no free will, then what do? Hedonism, live for pleasure. And there's quality pleasure over quantity pleasure. Those are the Greeks kind of came up with a lot of this stuff because they were basically atheistic. They laid a lot of the foundation,
And remember, this is all what's confined in nature's box. By the way, what is one common denominator of every living thing in nature's box? Every living thing in there is dying. And I have an answer for that at all. And if there's nothing outside the box, then that's a coffin.
Yeah.
And there's no hope. Because there isn't, there's no help. There's nobody, nothing on the outside going to come and help us. This is all there is. And I've heard some atheists kind of being upset because there is no God. Because maybe we would have some hope if there was. But it is a seriously hopeless. And so domination becomes the overarching principle. Since there is no God of order, then the state becomes the God of order, which is effectively socialism. And it's not the state owns the means of production, it's the state owns everything. So we have the FAA and the FCC, EPA to control every facet of life. Government entities running everything. And there's no liberty. Chemicals aren't free to decide what we're going to become. Chemicals are programmed. You mix hydrogen and oxygen, you get water. You mix them in different ratios, you get other things. But they don't decide to become one thing or another. It's all predetermined. There is no freedom if there's no free will. Liberty is meaningless in an atheistic universe. And so the state becomes, and this is part of Marx's, which of all of his predictions failed miserably, but that doesn't stop people from holding on to it. People become hedonistic. Yeah, there's no point to life. By the way, why should it be a surprise if we're teaching kids you're just animals with no purpose for existence, and life gets hard, why live? I'm just chemicals, I just go back into the ground, so suicide rates go up.
And taking others with you when you want to go.
Yeah, it's no big deal.
There's no consequence.
Another one is behavioristic, the Skinner behavioral studies, that all we are is in this programming is just stimulus and response. You get stimulate the right thing, you get a response. And if we knew every stimulus and response in your old higher history, we could predict the rest of your life. Because it's all pre-programmed. And they thought it had to do with that your behavior, the more you studied somebody, it's like psychology that has exploded. There's some real about, how the soul works. That's the psyche in psychology, but it's the word for soul. And there is a way that it works. There is a way that's true, but it's been so subverted by this kind of thinking that it's now the research is how can we manipulate people more effectively. And this is what we're seeing all around the world today. And it's not just America. It is a global phenomenon. And then Marxist dialectic materialism, everything is a conflict. This dialectics, okay, and Marx ran with it, that all of history is this conflict of the old and the new, and there's a thesis and antithesis, and from that conflict we get synthesis. We take two things, mash them together somehow, and we get something new and better. And that's in the Marxist idea. It's always an improvement. Not really, but that's the idea. And so this comes out, and that's where Marx didn't say it's history. And evolutionists and Marx and Darwin were pen pals. The first copy of Das Kapital was dedicated to Charles Darwin. Because without the evolutionary theory, Marxist theory was dead in the water.
it had no means of progression. And evolution gave that to him. And so here we are, we're on our way to the perfect communist man who never takes more than he needs and is always willing to share what he has. But right now we act too much like animals, so we need the state to control everything. That's the socialist phase of the communist progression. Until evolution carries us to, because Karl Marx was raised as a Christian. And some, I've never heard anybody describe what happened to him, what soured him, what turned him against, I mean, so hostily against his upbringing. But he has some of that. So there are those ideals that were missing in the church. That was, he saw that's how the church should be, but they weren't. So obviously there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. Anyway, evolution is doing that. It's an upward, and since then, which could be a whole other class, on what we know, the evolutionary is a blind process. There's no direction. There's no. It's not improving. We just kind of looking back from where we are. Imagine that it's. So then there another category is people who believe their free will. They're going to act intentionally, which we do. So we got this conflict going. Chemistry and physics says there's no free will, but we know. But we act like we have free will. So let's just go with it. And so it's called a presuppositional conflict. Our system denies it, but we see it. And that'll come, that conflict is going to come up more and more and more as we go through the reality. Just by observing, being observant, can give us some pretty amazing insights. And quite a few have got brilliant insights, but it contradicts their starting point. That's called utilitarianism. We'll just run with it because it works. Even if it contradicts what we basically believe. But it works. And that's why we have buildings and engineers and physicists and everything else that we have going on. So under free will, the egoism, you just live for yourself. And this at its root is the rugged individualist, which was really becomes prominent in American individualism, is the hero of the rugged individualist, the, you know, the entrepreneur or the big the guy. In fact, there's a, I don't know if you know the name Ayn Rand, but she wrote a book called The Fountainhead, which was made into a movie in the 50s. Which really gets into this guy, or Rourke, that is an architect, and he wants to do modern architecture, and everybody tells him he's a fool. The dean says you're a failure, but he has a vision of, and so he has to go against everybody to ultimately accomplish what he sees in the end. And it's a good. It's insightful into this conflict between those trying to force you into a mold versus you got something here that will die over there. And so you can't go over there. You can't even think about it. It's a different way of thinking and to become that kind of person. And it's a good insight. Ayn Rand herself was an atheist, came out of communist Romania, can't remember, but she was raised in a communist country and her parents brought her to America and she became an author. She also wrote the book called Atlas Shrugged, which is also very insightful on these, but there's no foundation in all this. So you live for self, utilitarianism, you just go with what works. Live to solve problems.
And then existentialism, you live to discover who you are. This is where we are today. This is really big. This is why there's 129 gender identities today, is because of this kind of existentialism. And its foundation that goes here. There is no absolute you until you decide for yourself who and what you are. And anybody who tries to tell you about who you fit, you know, historically there's family structures, there's business structures, or, you know, that kind of stuff. Anybody who tries to tell you that is just trying to get power over you. And so it's the ultimate independence. It's the independent from absolutely everybody. If you let somebody else tell you, you're not authentic in your being. It's up to you to figure out for yourself, by yourself, who and what you are.
So that would be considered an individualistic thought process.
It is. And it is about the loneliest place you can be. And I think that's why so many of the kids today are willing to sign up for socialist stuff. They can be part of a social order. It's a place to fit in, because all around me, they're telling me, no, you've got to be this individual, isolated, and all of that kind of stuff. But that's not how we're made. And so these represent two extremes: radical individualism and radical community. On both ends, instead of being a mix of both. And then, nobody can know anything for sure kind of stuff. So when somebody says, nobody can know anything for sure, are you sure nobody can know anything for sure? How do you know nobody can know anything for sure? These are questions that have self-inflicting wounds. But they sound good. You know, and to kids heading off to college, it sounds, wow, that's deep. And then come back up, no, nobody can know anything for sure. So I can live however I want.
Reminds me of the 60s and 70s when people were trying to find that.
Doing all the
drugs and doing all the other.
Where did that idea come from? So I started digging it back. It came from the philosophy departments of the universities in the 50s. Mm-hmm. That they were starting to feed this. And that all of these guys were leftists, Marxists. Mm-hmm. Marx, it was kind of obvious that Marx had pretty much failed, but they had begun bringing in this critical theory to criticize everything. It's never about solutions, it's about criticizing. That's the heart of critical theory. So in this, with pragmatism, it's a kind of deeper form of going with what works. So live to solve problems. You find your identity in a troubleshooter. I'm a troubleshooter. I like solving problems. But it almost becomes a religion. And there are people who are professional consultants that they go into an organization, find out what's wrong with it, but they're there to bring solutions. They're there to make the organization better in the end. And then skepticism, there's two forms of that. There's what we call sophists. The word soph is the word for wisdom, Sophia. All they do is argue. It's kind of like the modern lawyering. Doesn't matter if they're guilty or innocent, my job is to get them off or whatever. It's just master argumentation, to win arguments, and they'll take either side. So this pro side will hire them, and they'll argue and argue and win cases, and then the opposite side will hire them, and then they argue and argue and win cases, because that's what they do. They're master arguers, and I call them sophists. And then once they get tired of that, they become cynics. Everything is pretense. There is no truth. There's no right or wrong. It's just, everything's a power trip. Anti-establishment, anti-everything. because they're burned out on all that.
Going back to the lawyers taking sides, and it's like I've always wondered why the justice isn't the ultimate goal,
Yes, but and we'll get there. Why justice is really irrelevant, but it's useful in this world because there's still a semblance of Christianity mm-hmm. out there. So just everybody, people like justice, especially Christians, but justice is real. It's part of humanity. You'll see why that is. But it's to be fought against. Winning is, and power is more important than justice.
See, I think that's what the political world has turned to.
Mm-hmm.
It's winning and power.
Mm-hmm.
Truth is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, truth is a tool to be used. If we can get something on you that's true about your past, then we'll put it out and make sure the whole media gets a hold of it. And
but maybe even if it's not true.
And yeah, or lies.
Persuade people.
Yes. Because in this world, the ultimate foundation for ethics, there has to be a truth there somewhere. And since there is no truth, then the truth is, and Hitler said, economics is what we say it is. It must not. And truth is the same way. And we'll see. We'll get more into next time.